tomorrow night's joining us 906, Stacey Jo Rost, a.k.a. To be fair, I did scare you. Stacey. Wow.
Hi.
Stacey, you did scare me. It was a good one today because right when you scared me, so I open the page to bring you up, and then right when I look at the page, I see the red pop up, and then you yelled.
And so you're like, not today! But then it still got you. It's like when you know someone's hiding around a corner, and you know they're there, and you're like, don't betray me, body! And then they jump out, and you still, like, jump.
Yeah, always. Stacey, there was a headline today before we get in. You brought this up yesterday, and I really, really, really want to get into this about this beat writer who it just seems like a total troll looking at some of the stuff that he's written about people.
Correct.
I saw a headline today, and, you know, Stacey, we've talked a lot about the shooting in Texas this week, talked a lot about violence this week, talked a lot about the role of government in our lives. And I've had a lot of people come on talking about, well, we have to have some kind of solution to violence in this country. And, you know, next week I'll, you know, try to have different experts on to come and talk about, you know, like guns and I'm trying to get a lawyer friend of mine to come on and all this stuff. But the headline that I want to talk about really quick, Joe Biden is the leader of the free world. One of the worst atrocities to ever happen in the United States occurred less than 48 hours ago. Who do you think he would want to talk to in the White House? If you just had to assume, Stacey, who would you want him to be chatting with, talking to? You just had to guess.
Someone like a Mitch McConnell, someone with sway over GOP, the GOP.
Right. Like a maybe like a Representative Cornyn, maybe like you know, McConnell, maybe Kevin McCarthy, you know, House Minority Leader.
I feel like that's not going to be who it is, Jack.
No, he's bringing in BTS. BTS are headed to the White House. The K-pop supergroup BTS are coming to talk about he's gonna get BTS.
Oh.
BTS is gonna come, and they've got a great. They want to talk about anti-Asian hate crimes and discrimination, which is
okay,
like,
that's important.
It's important.
That's actually really important.
It's super important. But like, you know, just so everybody knows, like, you know, the Hart-Celler Act. It is illegal to discriminate. It's 14th Amendment. It's illegal to discriminate against someone based on their ethnicity. I want Joe Biden to talk to whoever he wants to talk to.
Well, and to be fair, hate crimes against Asian people have gone up.
Very true.
Essentially, since, yes.
Very true.
It's a problem.
I agree that it's a problem. I think especially in places like Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, for whatever reason, on the West Coast of the United States, there has been something like an 18% increase in hate crimes against Asian people, specifically elder Asian people. I don't want that to happen, Stacey. I don't like it at all. At the same time, like, maybe push BTS a little bit further down the schedule, right? Like, maybe say, I want to talk about this. This is super important to me. I want to have the photo op with you guys. I want to talk about how I condemn racism in all of its forms. I really got to focus on this thing right now when we're talking about McConnell and Cornyn and all these. That's my run-in theory, Stacey. Am I being a little bit too...
Yeah. A little bit, because I think you can do both. The wrench that's being thrown into it is that the group being used to advocate for change in it for the hate attacks is a pop group that I think it feels light, and they're actually like hugely influential, and like I understand getting them involved, but if it were just take them out of it. If it was like, hey, Joe Biden today is going to talk about the increase in hate crimes against Asian people, you'd be like, yeah, you could do both.
Okay, yes.
Both things are important.
Right.
For, I will say, Jack, for a split second.
Yeah.
I thought that you were going to say Joe Biden brought in BTS to consult with them over gun control laws. And I know that sounds stupid. I don't know why. I don't know why I thought that's what you were going to say, but I kind of paused for a minute and I thought that that was happening.
But when I saw the headline, Stacey, to be totally honest with you, I thought the exact same thing. Because the headline,
your mind is on gun control law,
right? It says this is all. I'm going to read all the headlines that I pulled up. BTS are heading to the White House. K-pop supergroup BTS headed to the White House. BTS to meet Biden at the White House. You have to go through a dozen articles before you actually get to the one from Billboard, which big ups to Billboards for being great journalists. BTS to visit White House to discuss anti-Asian hate crimes and discrimination.
Yeah. Yep, important.
That is important context. And I got to say, Rolling Stone, CNN, ABC News, you might want Politico. You guys might want to, like, you know, put a little bit more effort into actually explaining to people why exactly BTS is going to the White House. But I do think, Stacey, maybe if he had, I don't know, like Tammy Duckworth, or maybe he was talking to someone of mm-hmm. You know, I just think that maybe that might be a little bit more appropriate. I know I'm like nitpicking, but I think that there are many Asian American representatives who are working in Congress right now that he could have the exact same conversation with. And I think, to me, it would feel a little bit more genuine and a little bit more, I'm trying to unite the country. Because BTS is like, I guess in a way, it's almost like if Donald Trump brought on the Backstreet Boys to talk about discrimination. It just feels a little weird to me.
I could see that. Yeah. I think also, though, BTS being a little too old for this genre, mm-hmm. and also kind of like they became really popular kind of after I stopped listening to a lot of pop, but yeah, I might not get it, but I also understand that they're like insanely popular.
They are,
so
yeah.
It maybe part of it is drawing attention to the fact that they're having the conversation in the first place.
Well, there was a someone actually, I pulled a tweet up for you. This is someone who's not exactly like verified like you, Stacey. They don't have a blue check mark, so they're not a real person. Someone tweeted this out at 5:55 a.m. It says BTS is going to the White House next week to speak against anti-Asian hate crimes, y'all. I'm so proud of them. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Cry face, cry face, cry face. people love BTS in a way that I could never possibly. Another one. Someone says, congrats to Joe Biden for having the honor and the privilege of meeting BTS. That's not the other way around, right? It's that he should be honored to meet them. So
now here's important context, yeah. Though, and here's the thing, is the gun control conversation should be happening immediately right now and carrying forward with no imminent end date. However, since it is Asian American and I think Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Okay.
That's why it's on May 31st, I think, this specific meeting. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, well, it's going to be next Tuesday that they're in there. I don't know. I understand the initial impression of it,
mm-hmm.
and the general sentiment people have that the administration isn't doing enough, and that most people have for most administrations, that they're never doing enough. I think, though, I would love, and I agree with you on this, for the conversation about gun control, and importantly, for action about legislation for gun control, happen very quickly. And I am fully confident that Joe Biden is an advocate of a lot of this legislation. Mm-hmm. And I just wish, I don't know. I don't know what I want from him with this. Like, I don't know. I know that he supports it. I don't know what I want from Joe Biden.
Yeah, I it's tough because, like, what do you want from this? Is like, I think maybe we put too much emphasis on the president of the United States to be a doer, when in actuality, they're meant much more to be like a figurehead. They're much more mm-hmm. designed constitutionally. They're designed much more to be like, well, you know, I kind of oversee and make sure that Congress and the legislature is doing the right thing, right? We just got
to be a soother and try to put out fires.
Right. But not really. So now the president has become much more of a celebrity and much more of a, we think of the president, I think, as much more as like the guy to do stuff, as opposed to the guy who's supposed to be like, well, I sign this and I veto this and I protect the Constitution. We don't really live in the world of Warren G. Harding anymore, right? Where it was just kind of a job that you did for 4 years. now it's like you're the most important person to ever live. So, Stacey, I want to get to this before we run out of time, though. You brought up a story yesterday, and when you were telling me about it, I thought this is interesting. And then when I actually went into it, Stacey, it became much more interesting. And I think that it's tangentially related to the Joe Biden BTS thing. So there, yeah. Whereas, okay, so multiple NFL players have spoken out against a 49ers beat writer. Do you want to take it from here, Stacey, when it comes to the
sure.
the nuts and
bolts? I would classify him as a blogger, and there's nothing wrong with bloggers. I read a lot of sports blogs that have amazing content and have followed many people who started as bloggers, like Danny Kelly, who then became columnists and analysts for a bunch of different outlets. So what I would say, though, is that I am specifically adding that because sometimes blogs have more personal opinion, whereas a beat writer might be just objective fact, and it's almost like a type of person. So it's important to know that he inserts a lot of personal opinion into his coverage of the team. So this guy, Grant Cohn, is a Sports Illustrated fan-sided blogger who covers the 49ers, and he has been not particularly kind to a couple players, but to Javon Kinlaw, who was a former first round pick of the 49ers back in 2020 and has not really lived up to expectations, in part because of a series of injuries, including knee injuries. And if you look back at Grant Cohn's history between he and talking about Javon Kinlaw, it's just constant. Like, he's constantly needling this guy. So Grant Cohn was having, I think, like an Instagram live or YouTube, some kind of like live broadcast, and Javon Kinlaw joined it. I guess now you can have people join. So he requests to join, and Grant Cohn brings him on. And then Javon Kinlaw confronts him and is not happy with what he's been doing, and basically says, hey, like, I came up to you, because Grant Cohn says in a separate video prior to this live stream that Javon Kinlaw came up behind him and, I don't know, threatened him or whatever.
Right.
And so Javon Kinlaw came on to say, hey, here's what happened and here's what you did, and basically calls him out for writing, you know, being so bold in his writing and coverage, and then kind of backing down in person and saying, like, you're a coward. He didn't say you're a coward, but he all but said it. And then Grant Cohn, I think, in my opinion, rather than saying, hey, Javon, slow down for a sec, what have I said about you that's not right? Like, he didn't approach it like someone who has been called out about an opinion, which many colleagues of mine have, because your job is to critique athletes and athletes get upset about it. And I've heard of many a healthy conversation that my colleagues have had with athletes when this happens, where an athlete's like, why'd you say this? And then they say, well, here's why I said it. What did you think? And then the athlete adds context or says, oh, you're right. But instead, Grant Cohn kind of pushes him. And kind of keeps him going, right? Says, like, do you think you're making the 49ers proud? Like, intentionally kind of keeping him angry and getting into a personal argument. And so following this exchange was kind of split opinions, with some people saying Grant Cohn should never have been attacked for writing, you know, covering athletes and being critical. But I think with the majority of people, including many sports writers, saying Grant Cohn is not acting like a journalist. And he's making things too personal and being unprofessional in its coverage. And they kind of side with Kinlaw. So I'm curious to see what you thought about it, what you thought about Grant Cohn when you did some digging.
Yeah.
And then why it reminded you of the Biden BTS thing.
Okay. So Cohn, in just kind of my cursory Google search, I would agree. He doesn't seem like a journalist. I think he's an antagonist and a troll. Because the way that he phrases things and the way that he chooses to write about things is the way that a BTS fan might speculate about the members of BTS. There is a bizarre obsession with and it's almost like the inverse. So as a BTS fan might be bending over backwards to justify the actions of one of the members of BTS, Cohn seems to do the same thing, but in the inverse, where he goes out of his way to be intentionally cruel and antagonistic to people who otherwise don't really deserve it. That's my read of that. That there is like a bizarre... He does things and says things that I would never do or write or say about somebody who I am commenting on, unless I was actually like in front of them and was willing to confront them on it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So,
yes.
But I'm curious, Stacey, because you are in the sports world. What's your read of this?
Of Grant Cohn or yeah. people defending Grant Cohn?
Cohn.
Or of Cohn? So, again, I follow him on Twitter because he covers the 49ers, a yeah. team that we cover regularly. I want to say we might have even had him as a guest a long time ago. I don't really remember. But I knew of him prior to this. So what I'm going to say is, ironically, there's also personal bias involved. So here I am criticizing him about being personal, but I have some personal bias. I find that often in the world of sports, a lot of people covering sport have egos, whether it's because they are writers and journalists, and maybe they've traditionally felt like they're really smart and were the smartest kids in their class. And there's this idea that, like, I'm the smartest guy in the room. I think for some reason, a lot of people in this industry have that. Also, there's kind of this weird tangential fame you have where people follow you because you have information about celebrities that they care about.
Oh.
And I think that some people think that that fame, it's almost like you're the intermediate person, but because you're the recipient of the attention, you kind of get a high from that.
Oh, yeah.
So there are some reporters that are almost just famous for being like Adam Schefter. Like Adam Schefter is more famous than some of the athletes he's covering. But then there are people that are just kind of like, they get a lot of validation from that kind of attention. Again, I want to stress that we work in a market that's pretty great, and I've rarely run across this. But I think that I just have run across a disappointing amount of ego in sports, and it's always turned me off. I've always felt very excluded, also being a woman coming into the industry. And Grant Cohn kind of fits that bill. Like, he strikes me as someone where it's like, you care about the team you're covering, you aren't afraid to say what's on your mind, and that's great. But you've also got this weird kind of ego that I personally find to be unprofessional.
Okay. This is, Stacey, we're out of time, but this is very much so related to a friend of mine who writes for Comedy Central, and his proximity to very famous people or people who do specials and things like that. It's interesting to mm-hmm. see how people treat him when he mentions, like, oh yeah, no, I was talking to TJ Miller the other day, and everyone's like,
and people are like, whoa.
Stacey, listen, you're the best. We got to get out of here, but I'm taking tomorrow off, Stacey, because I got to work on Memorial Day. So this is going to be our last show this week together.
I'm really sad.
I'm not going to get scared by you tomorrow or on Monday, Stacey.
But you will on Tuesday.
I will on Tuesday,
which is my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, by the way, Stacey.
Thank you.
We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Today I got some news that I was not expecting, and there were a couple of deaths, not of people that I knew personally, but people that I was familiar with and people that I was a fan of what they did. Alan White, the longest tenured member of Yes and mm-hmm. Seattle area resident, died at 72. Really, really sad. I think it's difficult because you say, like, you know, you say really great loss, but can you really say that about the guy who, I mean, the guy that he did so much? He's got a career spanning six decades. He's like basically a rock god in many ways. So it's like when you live a life that full, I don't feel like you can say, like, oh, what a loss, because the person gave so much, you know, as an artist, like they gave so much to the community that it's like, it's more like I really want to say thanks. Do you know what I mean, Shane? Like, I just want to say thanks for everything that you've done for music. And again, he had been the drummer for the group Yes since 1972, and he had drummed for John Lennon. And it's a major loss. And another loss that happened today, Shane, I don't know if you heard about this. Ray Liotta died today. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, that one really made me upset. I've grown up a big Goodfellas fan. Big fan of that movie.
So I'm a bit of a cinephile. I'm a huge fan of film. And Ray Liotta is quietly one of the best actors of the last, like, 40 years. And in many ways, really underrated. I'm not sure if it's because he was always kind of an extension of Ray Liotta. Like, he was always some version of Ray Liotta. He was never, like, doing, like, crazy characters. He wasn't like a Gary Oldman. Or he wasn't like a, like someone who would slide in and out of different character motifs. He was always kind of Ray Liotta, but his ability to expand himself as an actor is just amazing. And I wanted to take the time to talk about some of his roles that some people might not know about. Everybody knows he was in Field of Dreams as Shoeless Joe Jackson. He was great in that. He was in Goodfellas. Obviously, everyone's going to be talking about Goodfellas because it's the role that everybody remembers for him as Henry Hill, one of my favorite movies of all time. But then there are other roles that he was in movies that didn't do as well, but that he is fantastic in. So as an example, he is in the movie Blow as Johnny Depp's dad, Fred Young. Have you seen this movie, Shane?
No, I have not actually, no.
Okay, so it's not very good, but all of the scenes with Ray Liotta are amazing. I mean, he eats up every scene that he's in because he can be so vulnerable. He plays the father of a drug dealer. And his ability, in the very short period of time that he's in the movie, to emote and to draw you in as a father figure is just amazing. He also played Henry Oak in Narc, which is another movie I highly, highly, highly recommend. It's kind of a whodunit film about narcotics officers. And Ray Liotta in that film as well, you see how much he can extend himself as an actor, and his emotional range is just, he was an amazing, he just had such a unique ability. I know I keep using this phrasing, but to pull himself in a particular direction as an actor, even though he wasn't necessarily, like, he wasn't being Winston Churchill, right? He wasn't playing, like, Richard Nixon. He was always Ray Liotta, but just that innate ability to draw you in with his acting is just amazing. I mean, Shane, any other movies come to mind? Because I got a couple more here that I could throw out there.
I mean, he was in Observe and Report, which I think is a really, really funny comedy. He was in that really silly movie Wild Hogs, which I think is a little bit underrated for how good it was. He was also in The Many Saints in Newark. He worked alongside...
He was really good in that as, what was his name? Hollywood, what was it? I'm not going to remember. But another one that I want to point out to people, another movie that he was in that he really excelled in and was just magnetic in that role was in Revolver, which is a Guy Ritchie movie that most people don't even remember Guy Ritchie making, because unfortunately Guy Ritchie made the mistake of having a really good script and then hiring Andre 3000. And Andre 3000 cannot act. He is a terrible actor. And so you've got Ray Liotta and you've got Jason Statham. And it's this really, really interesting script. And then you've got one of the worst actors to ever live. That is Andre 3000. He's just absolutely terrible in that movie in every way, shape, or form. Also, Vincent Pastore is in that, and he is great in it. It's just Andre 3000 as Avi is just awful. Mark Strong is also in that movie. Revolver is a sleeper hit from Guy Ritchie, and if you can get past how terrible, absolutely terrible Andre 3000 is in that movie, I highly recommend it as well. Anything else, Shane, you can think of with Ray Liotta before I cut you off?
No, I mean, there's so many lines that, like, I think of with, that me and my friends use all the time. And me and my friends, just like back in the day, one thing that we would always say, we would always repeat the line about, you know, you can't really... why am I spacing on it right now when I'm put on the spot? I've been quoting this guy for years. So just to see that he's not with us anymore is definitely a huge bummer. And it sucks that you didn't get to see just one more good film, you know, just to see another piece of work by him, which is always the case for, you know, when any creator dies. But yeah, the guy will definitely be missed.
Yeah, and I saw an interview with him a while back, and he was talking to somebody about, you know, why he made the switch from movies to doing TV. And he said that he was doing TV because he could just get consistent work doing TV, but he couldn't get, as he put it, butts in seats when it came to movies. And I just thought that that was so weird, because every time I saw him in anything that he was doing in film, I just thought that he was just great in. And so I guess it was kind of like, I don't know, maybe he missed the mark in a lot of ways, because he honestly, there was a lot of movies that he was in that are just flat out bad. But he is good in them. Do you know what I mean, Shane? Like, he is great in them as an actor. But he is just not, like, oh, another one, A Place Beyond the Pines. He plays a corrupt detective in that. I think he's only in the movie for like a solid 7.5 minutes or 10 minutes. He's phenomenal. And it was almost like he just kept getting put in these like bad movies, and he would show up and he would just like knock it out of the park, and then I guess go on to do another film. So he'll be sorely missed, and it's just as disappointing to me that he died so young. He's only 67 years old, and he was working on like I think 3 or 4 different other films that were supposed to come out. Some of them are in post-production, so there's a couple of his movies that will be coming out posthumously, and so I'll be sure to check those out. But Shane, anything else you got to say about the great, as we pay tribute to great Ray Liotta before we get out of here?
No, but I remembered the line finally. Never rat on your friends, yeah, and always keep your mouth shut, people. Remember that.
Yeah. That's a great line. All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back to wrap all this up with Lisa coming up right after this. Fun show that was. Lisa, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I shall be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Are you going to actually take the day off, or are you filling in for somebody?
I get to have the day off, because the original plan was that John Curley and Sherry Elliker were going to do the Memorial Day show, and Jack Stein was going to get to enjoy his Memorial Day. And then somebody told John Curley that he was going to work on Memorial Day, and he said, no. So,
well, he's so been it's going to be 10 years, and yeah, okay. Well, I'm sorry. But at least you get tomorrow off.
Yeah, so I get to, Brian Buckley was nice enough to, he said, do you want to take tomorrow off? I said, yes, I do. And so I'm going to do that. And then it's going to be me and Spike O'Neill on Monday. So that should be loads of fun. Yeah. Loads of fun.
Yeah.
So what is on your mind, Lisa? I'm deeply curious about this. How's Mr. Motley?
You know, he's not happy today. I think it's the mats. I think they're hurting his tummy and his paws, and I feel like the worst dog mom in the world. So hopefully next time we talk, that he will have a newly shorn body and be acting puppy like again. So that's a good thing. And the new season of the show Hacks is on HBO. So I was doing a little binge watching of that today. That is, I don't know if you've seen it. It's a show about a woman comedian and who's trying to rejuvenate her act. And she takes on a new writer. And it's excellent. Jean Smart, who is a Seattleite, is the star in that show. So another recommendation.
Lisa, your recommendations are 10 out of 10. The Carlin documentary,
yeah,
I just finished part one. Oh, so good. So good.
Wait till you see part two, and the last 10 minutes will make you cry. I mean,
really? Okay.
You're going to be stunned and you will cry. It's amazing.
Well, I like how they made the decision from an editing perspective to where they have the audio clips of Carlin talking, but they don't have the video, that they take the pages from his journal to emphasize what he was talking about. That is so clever that I'm probably going to have to steal that if I work on film at some point in time in the future. Because I used to edit for companies and stuff like that. And that little editing trick, I just thought that was so clever to give a visual to the mostly audio medium. I'm sure Mr. Motley will be okay, though. Yeah, I mean, he'll get his mats shorn, A plus word, and then he'll be okay. Yeah,
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. And rehearsing a lot. We're going to be rehearsing with actual amplifiers and microphones on Saturday.
Getting ready
for that big June 4th gig. Wish us well.
That's awesome. I was actually playing the Riggio Telecaster, not Telecaster, the Tango Deluxe, as Joe Riggio likes to call it. I was playing it at a much louder volume than I normally play my guitars, and wow, that guitar is loud. It is a very, very resonant guitar. It is loud. Shane, what's on your mind, buddy?
Well, I had an interesting discussion and kind of a little bit of a debate with my buddy today. We got into a really big, deep talk about the show Seinfeld and just about how great it really truly is from like a writing perspective. So I've been kind of just like doing little bits and research about Seinfeld because I've watched a lot of Seinfeld. I wouldn't say I'm a diehard fan, but the one thing about the show is that there's so many killer lines in that show that I can't help but want to start sticking my teeth more into it. And Netflix has all the shows on their service now. So I got Jerry in my head. I got Jerry walking around. We got Kramer. We got everybody just kind of sitting in my head right now because I'm still thinking about the discussion we had because it's really enlightening just talking about some of the goofy stuff that is kind of timeless. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I will give you a hot take though. I will say It's Always Sunny is a better written show than Seinfeld is. Hot take.
I am a pretty big Sonny fan, so I do agree their writing process is great. But also, I mean, there's some jokes in Seinfeld that still kill me. Like, one of my favorite jokes is when George is talking to people. He's like, oh, I love gay people. My father's gay. It's like, I don't know why it's so funny, but it is.
The one that I always gets me is when George eats out of the trash. Do you know what I'm talking about? He finds like an eclair that's like has a bite taken out of it in the trash. I love that bit. I love that. It's so funny. And then the guy comes in. I eat out of the trash sometimes too. That is hilarious. The thing about Always Sunny though. So Seinfeld is like line, joke, 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 joke. It's really, really tight. In It's Always Sunny, you can tell which bits are improvised versus which bits are written, and I like that. I like that vibe of them kind of going off script.
Yeah, the chemistry of Always Sunny is absolutely fabulous, and it's amazing that they keep getting renewed for more seasons. I hope they never stop.
Yeah, especially the topics that they cover can get pretty dark sometimes. Anything you want to say about your upcoming performance before we have to get out of here? How can people see you if they want to go see you singing?
Oh, you know, I think we're going to keep that quiet for now. It's the first gig in 2.5 years. So, you know, a few close friends are going to be welcome. We'll see where we go.
If you're lucky, you might stumble upon this amazing performance. If you're lucky, listeners.
We'll tell you more.
Okay. Because Shane and I, we're still waiting for our invitations, Lisa. We know that they're in the mail. We know.
Yep.
But okay, good. Speaking of, by the way, Shane, do you want to take us out this lovely evening?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for lovely Lisa Brooks, I am Sugar Shane Peterson, and that guy on the other side of the line, that's Mr. Talk Radio, Jack Stein, and we are Cairo Knights. Same time, same place, same station. You know where to find us, folks.
Perfect.